I think we'll start, if that's okay. It's about 5 minutes. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshuhu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinavandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranavami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vayascha Kripa Sindhupya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Thank you so much for joining for the Bhakti Shastri, and even those who have just come to visit the temple casually, welcome. So last 2 weeks ago, we started the Bhakti Shastri, and we started off with Nectar of Instruction. And 2 weeks have passed, and then this week, or the next 2 weeks, we are starting with Isopanishad. Now, you may ask that we just have about, why did we do that? Why did we switch from Isopanishad to Nectar of Instruction to Isopanishad? The idea is we can do a comparative study of the two books, wherein Srila Prabhupada gives the same ideas. And many of the points are repeated. So it gives a good comparative study. And at the same time, it's a little bit of variation. It will make it more fun and interesting to have two books, weaving through two books at the same time. So today we'll do Isopanishad, then we'll go back to Nectar of Instruction and Isopanishad. So in that way we'll complete. And actually before even I start the class, I would like to take permission from Nirakula Mataji, Akrunath Prabhu and Vaishesh Prabhu. Thank you. So how was it? How was the experience reading the first three verses? Good. The pace was good. The material. Any time, if you have comments or any things which needs to be improved, or any other ideas or suggestions to make it better, always please to send me to me. So, and just to give a brief overview, the Nectar of Instruction we had discussed first three verses. We started off with preface, where Srila Prabhupada gave introduction to Nectar of Instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami. And then he gave the most important point that unless one understands the teachings of the Goswamis, then one has absolutely no inkling to understand the transcendental pastimes of Radha and Krishna, which are the ultimate goal of life. The first verse in Nectar of Instruction was the six urges and how they push the living entity, and how one who has controlled those urges can make disciples all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada's purport was very, very perfectly explaining each vegam, how to control it, and more importantly, how to divert it. Because it's impossible, Srila Prabhupada also mentioned, that it's impossible just to control the urges just by itself. I mean, to create mind with just a vacuum, to say to the tongue, okay, don't eat at all. So the tongue, the force of urges are so strong that they will push a man anyways. And when we study Nectar of the Bhagavad Gita study in the next semester, Arjuna asks the same question in third chapter. That, you know, what is this that's pushing? It's as if like automatically people are being forced to commit sin, as if they are being pushed by some incredibly powerful force. What is it? And then Arjuna, Krishna answers the same question. So the vegam and how to divert that vegam in Krishna consciousness was the most positive thing. One of Srila Prabhupada's or the Krishna consciousness movement is that it's not dry. The senses are neither asked to be completely restrained and live in a vacuum, neither are the senses given unrestrained freedom. It is just that we divert our sense activities into Krishna's service. That's the sum and substance. So that was the first verse, which was the pushes and how to divert them effectively in Krishna's service. And it was also a very beautiful explanation by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Anuvritti section. So that was the first verse. The second verse was, what are the six types of detrimental factors in Krishna consciousness? Those are the atyara, prayasascha, prajalpo, niyamagraha. The six varieties of, you can say, illicit indulgences that can dampen, that can put a stop on our spiritual life and check our progress in Krishna consciousness. Again, very beautiful explanation Prabhupada gave, took time to explain each of the six detrimental factors, six hindrances. One of the things is, if one wants to do more, as I go along, we'll just give a few more materials to refer to if you want to. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a book called Bhaktalokya, which is actually a series of essays which he composed for Sajjana Toshani. And that was formed into a book called Bhaktalokya, where he very deeply goes into each of these six positive and six negative influences. So if you see the first verse, Rupa Goswami says, the belly wants to fill. It wants to kind of eat a lot, more than what it needs. And in the second verse, in the very first verse says Atyahara. It seems a little bit of, somebody can interpret that to be a fault of repetition, saying that the indulgence of belly has already been mentioned in the first verse. Why is it again Rupa Goswami, who is Acharya, Rasika Acharya, and who is a very, very precise word master, who uses very, very precise terms in his writings, why would he actually write Atyahara again in the second verse? And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in this case, there is no question of fault on the part of Rupa Goswami. It is Atyahara means that when we eat food, all the five senses enjoy. The taste of the food is enjoyed by the tongue. The sight of food is enjoyed by the eyes. The touch of food is enjoyed by the hands. The smell of food is enjoyed by the nose. And all these senses are actually enjoying when we eat food. So Atyahara can also mean the sensual enjoyment or the objects of senses which the senses try to grasp. So that is one point which one needs to be aware of in case somebody says, why is it that there is a repetition here? So in the second verse, the six faults are enumerated clearly. And the third verse is the six positive. This is very great hope Srila Prabhupada gives, that if we follow this path, our success is undoubtedly assured in Krishna consciousness. So very inspiring verses. The first three verses give a summary. What is bhakti? What are the six things that will check? What are the six things that will enhance? And what is the qualification of a spiritual master? So we take it as a unit. And then the second part will be the actual practical implementation of the first part, which is association of devotees. Rupa Goswami says in the first three verses, and Prabhupada also emphasizes over and over again, that one has to associate with devotees. So the next verses, they talk about how to associate, the association part, practically how to associate with devotees. We learn that as we come back to the nectar of instruction after 2 weeks from now. So that's a little bit of overview and summary. Did anybody had any other points to make or any other observations or comments? Yes, Nilesh Prabhu. Can you use the microphone? Thank you.
Actually, one of the things mentioned was that to memorize the verse, Anya Bilasita. And actually, I found that, like, I opened the Nectar of Devotion and I couldn't find that. But the thing is, I think the Sanskrit verses are not in the Nectar of Devotion, right? So, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a different book?
It's text 3, right?
Yeah. I mean, in the sense, Nectar of Devotion actually doesn't mention any Sanskrit verses.
It's a summary.
Right? So it's a summary, yeah. So,
Bhakti Rasamrita, the Nectar of Devotion is a summary study.
So, is there any book called, like, do we have that book?
Yes, we do have. There is a 2-volume book published by His Holiness Banu Maharaj, which is called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and it's available at krishna.com. And in that, all the 2,129 verses of Nectar of Devotion are mentioned. And then you can take a look at it. Especially this verse has about 10 pages of purport, commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. But since it's completely mentioned here and elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita also, I think it's, and then we can memorize that. But next time in Nectar of Devotion, probably we'll go in greater depth on this particular verse. If we have time, we can have a class just on this verse itself. Is that okay? Yes, Prabhuji.
I think we can find that verse. I think that in the Nectar of Devotion we can find the translation of that verse if we find where it is paraphrased.
Right. Okay.
But it's not in quoted like verse then translation.
All right then. Let's go on to the next phase then. Ishopanishad. Great. Did everybody get a copy of notes? So Isopanishad, if you start with the first page, which is called the Overview of Vedic Knowledge, if you go turn 2 pages. I'm sorry, I didn't put the page numbers. I'll put them when I do it next time from the notes. So, I just gave a brief overview of what Vedic knowledge is and where Isopanishad fits into that whole scheme. As we know, the word Vedas is originated from the word or the root vid, which means to know. And all the knowledge that is available is through the Vedas. And Vedas actually caters to a wide range of people with wide varieties of knowledge. And if we see the overview, so the first category, the main 2 categories are called the Shruti and the Smriti. And the Shrutis are the 4 Vedas. Actually, they are called Samhitas. And so if you hear the word Rig Samhita or Yajur Samhita, it means Veda. So the 4 Vedas, Veda was originally one. Vyasadeva divided it into 4 parts and gave it to his disciples, each branch of that Vedas. So the 4 Vedas are the Rig Veda, the Sama Veda, the Yajur, and the Atharva Veda. And then there are explanatory books on Vedas called Brahmanas. These are mainly for householders and who need to perform Vedic rituals. Those are the Brahmanas for. The next is Aranyakas, which is exclusively the instructions and the knowledge for those who are going to be in the forest or the renounced order of life. And then the Upanishads. So Shruti, these are the these 4 set of or collection of knowledge is Shruti. Shruti means that which is heard. As we know previously, the people in general had such a sharp memory that once they hear, and they would remember it. We didn't need notebooks, laptops, computers, notepads, Google, iPhone, and so many things. But so that was Shruti. And Vyasadeva, he knew that the age which is coming down, Manda Subanda Mandayo Manda Bhagya Vipadritaha. So he knew that the generation which is coming down the line wouldn't have as sharp memory. So he wrote them, and then he compiled and he segregated. So these 4, they are Shruti. The next one is Smriti, of course. Smriti is that which is remembered. Smriti means to remember. Smrityo, many places in Bhagavatam the word Smrityo comes in, which means to remember. And the Smritis are like itihasas, like Puranas, like Ramayana, Mahabharata, and then Puranas, 18 Upapuranas, and numerous Thalapuranas. Thalapuranas and Upapuranas, we don't worry too much. They are just, Upapuranas are again explanations of Puranas, And Stala Puranas are like local. In some places in India, they had their own commentaries written down for that purpose or that place. So that's called Stala Puran. And then we have Dharma Sutras, like Vedanta Sutra. That is versified equivalents of Dharma Sutras, Manu Smriti, Vishnu Smriti, and all that. Then we have Sutras, Vedanta Sutras. These are so many sutras. And the other categories are Vedangas, Upavedas, and writings. Vedangas are six in there are six. That is Jyotish, Nirukti. There are six Vedangas which actually tell you how to pronounce Vedas correctly. For example, the meter. Every Vedic mantra needs a meter. So there was a Nirukti which actually tells you the meter, correct meter, how to pronounce. So those are the details. And then Isopanishad actually forms the last chapter of Yajurveda. The last chapter of Yajurveda has 40 chapters, and then one of the chapters is Isopanishad. So that's a brief overview. Any questions? Yes, Prabhuji.
Couple. One is, I want to know, what is the Shruti Sutras and what are the Griha Sutras and the difference? And then the other is, in the Shukla Yajurveda, there's 40 chapters, and we know that the last one is one of these, is an Upanishad. What are the other chapters? Are they Upanishads? Are they Brahmanas, Aranyakas, or are they Samhitas, or what?
The second question I have to find out. I don't know the answer. I don't know what are all the 40 chapters in the Vedas. But the sutras are the Shrauta Sutras and the Griha Sutras. They are sutras for, Griha Sutras is for like householders. And I can find out what is Shrauta Sutras. I don't know the details for that. This, I took it from, the source of this was Satyaraj Prabhu's book. We have that book, small book, History of...
The Hidden History?
Yes. Okay. So that's where I took it from. And so in one page he covered everything. So I read it, but he didn't have a whole lot of information. In one page he tried to condense everything. So Griha Sutras are just for the householders. And Shrauta Sutras, I don't know. The Vedanta Sutras are aphorisms. Of course we know about Vedanta Sutras.
I've heard Vedanta Sutra is considered Shruti also, but in Prabhupada's books I think it says that it's considered Shruti.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'll find out for you. If that is the case, I'll just correct it.
So actually, what does it mean by Sutra? For example,
Sutra means aphorisms. They are like very, very terse, one-liners, basically explaining a concept. It's like San Jose is a city. Is an aphorism. But then, you know, in San Jose you find like it's a huge thing. So the aphorisms are very terse. They are sutras. And then there are explanations. For example, Vedanta Sutra, the explanation for Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Vyasadeva himself wrote a natural commentary. So commentaries are there which explain the sutras.
So Srila Prabhupada's books come under category 4, right? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And Srimad Bhagavatam?
It's Puranas. It's Smriti.
Okay.
It's okay. There are 18 Puranas. Most, again, there is a debate going on. Some say 18, some say 20. But there are 18 Puranas, and then they are divided into 6 Sattvic, 6 Rajasic, and 6 Tamasic Puranas. I don't know, maybe Vaishish Prabhu can answer this. I had the question myself that my understanding was when you say Puranas, they are like, you know, pretty like elevated scriptures, and why do you say tamasic? It looks like ignorant scripture. Right. That was something I thought, but I wanted a confirmation from Vaishish Prabhu. He said that the Puranas are tamasic, or they can be in tamasic because they are catering to the people who are in the mode of ignorance. And so that's why they are called tamasic Puranas. Otherwise, it's not, the Puranas themselves are tamasic, that means, that was the point. Thank you. Yes,
another question. I was wondering that, so Isopanishad is the last part of Yajurveda?
Last chapter, yes, Madhiji.
The last chapter of
Last chapter of Shukla Yajurveda. There are again, the Vedas have Shukla and black and white. So there are divisions in the Vedas. But and then just for the record, all the Vedas which are there, ever published or which are ever been written is lost in time. People did some research and the scholars said that the Vedas are these many verses and out of which we can't find some of the verses. They're completely gone. They're lost in time. So one cannot really say that if they say I have read Vedas, they haven't read complete Vedas because they can't find the complete Vedas. Just a footnote. So we'll the first table, of course, has our usual graphs, which has the number of pages of purport or and versus the text. So if you can see the first text, it shows that the bar is going all the way till 2.5 or 2.75 pages, and the second text is going up till 1.5 pages. So it's just a comparative analysis to see how much. So we can see if in these 2 weeks I have to complete 5 verses, you can look up to see how many pages are there here, and whether there are a lot or less, and just for comparison. Anubhav Preshak Maharaj likes to do this. So the first part, or the introduction, is a lecture given by Srila Prabhupada describing what Vedas are. And if you can... So the first thing he says is that Vedas are apaurusheya, meaning to say that they are divine. They are not written by a man who's capable of committing 4 activities or defective activities, or who has 4 deficiencies, which are that... Yes, 4 deficiencies in a conditioned person. Anybody? Kishore is already ready. Yes. Nice.
Always illusion.
Yes.
Yeah, imperfect senses.
Nice. This is a group work. This is not an exam, so it's okay. Yes, those are the 4. So these are the 4. And actually, Anubhav Preshak Maharaj, he studied psychology. He was a major in psychology. So he tries to analyze stuff according to psychological things. And he says the 4 things we can put it as a psychology. Imperfect senses gives to imperfect perception of things, which causes one to be illusion. For example, if it's at night, your eyes can't see it correctly. And you see a rope lying in the street. And because of that, the perception of that rope being a snake... It's an illusion. Imperfect senses give you to an illusion that it's a snake instead of a rope. So he did a little bit of analysis like that. And if we go through the whole thing, Srila Prabhupada says how Vedas are axiomatic truth, meaning to say they are just taken without trying to do research work. And for example, he gives the classic example of a cow dung, wherein Vedas say that cow dung is... it's a sacred and it's perfect article. But dung of any animal or a human being is something which is abominable, so much so that if you touch it, then you have to take shower. But how come it seems to be obviously at contradiction. But later scientists did research work on cow dung and they found it has all the antiseptic properties. So much so that, in India they use it for cooking. And I remember when I was growing up, my grandmother would take that cow dung patties, and then unfortunately she would put some kerosene on it, so or some other flammable liquid, so that it can light up, because it will take a long time to actually light up. They used to take the cow dung and mix it in the water, and they used to just spatter it in front of the house. It did work because there were no ants coming in, and in the evening no mosquitoes would come flying over that area, so it was pretty okay. So this is one of the axiomatic truths of Vedas. That's what Srila Prabhupada talks about. And then the other aspect is the evidences or the knowledge gathering. There are 3 types of ways you can gather knowledge, which is microphone. I've been ordered by Ramaswamy Prabhu to make sure that everybody takes microphone.
Pratyaksha, which is directly... seeing and then getting information,
right?
And then anuman, that is that logical inference, or
yes?
And then shabda praman,
nice,
means by hearing.
Nice. So what are Vedas?
Shabda praman.
Good. So those are the next 2 things, paragraphs which Srila Prabhupada covers about how Vedas are shabda praman. And then how another important question is that if we study Vedas, if we study all the literatures, Vedic literatures, can we know God? Can we know perfectly who is Krishna? Why not Hari Guru Prabhu?
Actually, I had a doubt before that. You said the three methods of acquiring knowledge, but I've even read Prabhupada's purports where he mentions about itihas as being the fourth process of acquiring knowledge. It may not be transcendental knowledge, but it's knowledge nonetheless, and that's one way of learning as history.
Okay.
Not necessarily like the Purana history, but even worldly history.
I see.
And I'm not sure if that is...
Do you happen to know where he mentioned that?
I don't remember that place I read, but I definitely know that Prabhupada talks about four processes.
Okay.
And
if you can find it. Yes, no wish.
Reference in the 11th canto.
Okay.
Krishna is speaking to Uddhava and he says, Shuti Pratyaksham Aityam.
Aityam, I see.
Which means that. But also in Tattva Sandarbha, when he's describing different kinds of evidence, kinds of evidence are actually expanded into a larger sublist. But these are the general categories.
Okay. Thank you.
I think most of it has to do with what the Vedas deal with. I heard statistics saying that 96% of the instructions, even the Vedas, is describing what he is not. But rarely things are described about what he is. And even we can get a hint from the conversations between Narada and Vyasa. After the compilation of all the Vedas, Vyasa was still unsatisfied. Which goes on to indicate that... and even there's a verse of, I think, Sukadeva Goswami says, Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Parayagya, which indicate that these things are there, but since he's Adokshaja, it's not to be translated and communicated through a written or oral medium. So.
Right. And also we have our famous statement in Brahma Samhita where Brahma said, Vedesh Durlavam Adurlavam Atma Bhakto. Govindam Adi Purusham. So it's and through pages of Vedas, one cannot know Krishna. And in fact, we have this famous pastime from Krishna book, wherein the wives of the Vedic Brahmanas, they were perfectly well-versed in Vedas, rituals, the exact pronunciation, the exact time, the auspicious ingredients, everything they were well-versed of. But when Krishna came and asked them for some food, they refused. So this is a practical example of how just by being very learned and being very Vedic, but not knowing Krishna or not having association of Krishna and his devotees. Here we have association of Krishna and his devotees like Vaisheshika Prabhu. So we know Krishna easily. It's easy to know Krishna. Vedesh Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakta. That through his own devotees, Atma Bhakta, Krishna is very easily known. Why? Because Krishna's devotees are the reservoir of his love. We are here to love Krishna, and Krishna is, as we'll read in the Nectar of Devotion, where Rupa Goswami says that Krishna is Vishaya Vigraha, he is the object of love. And where his devotees are Ashraya Vigraha, they are the reservoir of that love. And one approaches Krishna, taking that drop of reservoir of that love, then one can actually love Krishna. If one directly tries to approach Krishna without that love, what can you love Krishna? So, yes, Rakshit Prabhuji.
At the same time, it is said that the ultimate goal of the Vedas is to know Krishna.
Correct.
This is also cited in all of Srila Prabhupada's books.
Right.
So, there is some element in the Vedas that needs to be extracted or focused upon to lead to that goal. In general, people may be studying Vedas in a certain way that is not leading to Krishna. But the goal is Krishna. And if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, it also comes from the Mahabharata and it's part of the Vedas. So it would seem that so far as the Vedas are concerned, if properly pursued with focus on the essential aspects of it, it would lead to realization of Krishna. Or it should, because the ultimate goal of the Vedas is to know Krishna.
Right. If the Vedas are studied under a devotee of Krishna. That is the key here. Somebody who is just a scholar, and if one tries to study, because in universities there are so many professors who are expert in Vedic knowledge, and there are students who do PhD under them trying to read Vedas, but they don't come to Hare Krishna temple. So that if you study Vedas under the guidance of a devotee of the Lord, then one gets the meaning. Because Krishna can be obtained only by his devotees. And even so, in the Bhagavatam, 5th canto, Narada says, Yamadibir Lokapatai, that you can do all these yamas and all these prescriptions which are there in the Vedas, and all the lust and the greed in the heart is destroyed, but the soul is not satisfied. That soul satisfaction is happening only through devotional service to Krishna. When one establishes in that rasa of serving Krishna, then the soul is completely at, yes, this is my ultimate. That there can be no better state than this. Yes, Prabhuji.
We were mentioning last week, there was a statement in the preface that said the spiritual life depends on the attitude of the follower.
Right.
And in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna does say, you know, gyatung drashtung chitatvena praveshtung hik bhaktya tvananya ya shakya hamevang vidho arjuna. The only way to really know him in his form of Krishna is through bhakti. And but then you could say the Vedas are pointing to that, or at least Bhagavad Gita is pointing to that. Srimad Bhagavatam these are Vedic literatures also. They're not Shruti maybe, but Bhagavatam is commentary on the Vedanta Sutra.
Right.
And so they're pointing to that. But it's Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are a special kind of literature because they've presented the essence very very directly, which you don't find if you just study the Upanishads or let alone the Vedic Sanhitas.
Right. Actually, it is, in this case, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, that he was passing by the house of Devananda Pandit, who was an expert, completely a scholar on Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he was following with his associates, and he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from him, what Devananda Pandit was speaking, and he began to angrily comment to his disciple, to his followers. He said, this man doesn't know anything about Bhagavatam. He has no clue of what Bhagavatam is, yet he goes about preaching Bhagavatam. And this shows that unless one is studying Bhagavatam under a devotee or a Bhagavata of the Lord, then one cannot obtain Krishna, even if you are reading Bhagavatam. What to speak of other Vedic literatures? Where Bhagavatam directly points one thing, it just dharma bhojita kaitavo nirvatanam. It says that forgetting all the other dharma artha kama moksha, it just points to only Krishna's devotional service to the Lord. Yet, Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thoroughly condemned Devananda Pandit because he had no clue of what Bhagavatam was telling. And in fact, I have personally seen many of the preachers of Bhagavatam who are not in the line of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and honestly, you don't feel that effect. You can, yes, Prabhuji.
Also, Bhagavad Gita. There, like Prabhupada mentioned in the introduction, there were so many. There were so many editions in English, but he couldn't recommend any of them.
Right.
And there are so many people who are scholars and they've studied Bhagavad Gita so much, but they haven't come to the point of saying it tells you to become a devotee. So what do they know of Bhagavad Gita really? They're giving classes all over San Jose. We can go to Bhagavad Gita classes where people ignore that the essence is to become a devotee of Krishna.
Right. Thank you, Prabhuji. Also, we are on book distribution. Yeah, one point I wanted to make. We are on book distribution and we had this elderly Indian gentleman come. He was coming from India visiting his son or daughter or something like that. And then we showed him Bhagavad Gita. And then he gave me this very condescending stare, and he said, Bhagavad Gita, I have written a book on Bhagavad Gita.
Prabhupada. Yeah, I think the point that comes out from the discussion is that there is a certain process of knowledge or understanding God, which is coming through disciplic succession, and those who have understood it in the original way or learned it from the spiritual master can only teach it to their disciples. But still the point can be made that the source of the knowledge is the Vedas. It has to be imparted. The truth has to be imparted in a certain way. So we can talk about the methodology or the process, but the contents are still coming from the Vedas.
True.
And so the knowledge of the Vedas has to be learned and imparted in a certain way through a disciplic succession process or
Correct.
Whatever.
Correct. Thank you.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita over and over again, now I'm giving you confidential knowledge. Now I'm giving you more confidential knowledge. Now I'm giving you most confidential. And it's confidential because it is Vedic knowledge. It's Vedanta. Krishna is speaking Vedanta philosophy. But he's explaining it in a way that can only be understood by devotees. And he even says in the 18th chapter, don't explain it to someone who's not a devotee, who's envious, who's not austere. You know, he gives these warnings. It can't be understood by them if you're not a devotee. So he says, Bhakto Sime Sakacheti, because you're my devotee and you're my friend, then you can understand it. That's the only way you can enter into the confidential understanding. It's like an open secret, Prabhupada says.
Right, thank you. Yes, Anuprabhu, we will take that last question, then we'll go on. We'll try to complete, cover all the verses, and then we'll take more questions in the last. Yes, Prabhuji.
You know, association with an advanced devotee is done in two forms, through Vapu and through Vani. And Vani is following the instructions of an advanced devotee. That means hearing, sravanam. So if one were to read the Srimad Bhagavatam as written by or translated by Srila Prabhupada, isn't that the same as intimate association with an advanced devotee of the Lord? And if the answer is yes, then aren't you going to get the same effect as associating in the Vapu form with an advanced devotee? First question. Second question or comment is, you know, when we read or hear about Vedic texts, apurusheya means they're from the Lord, from the Lord himself, he said it. So they are pure and uncontaminated and very effective. So but if you were to listen to this without any sense of skepticism, without any sense of confrontational, you know, if you want to oppose something in a derogatory sense, but if you're open-minded, then it'll have a positive effect. Correct? So my point is, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, as written by him, with all his translations, it's as good as, being associated with a pure devotee. And it's not the same as reading some other scholar's, thesis on the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Actually, thank you so much. That was my next point. Now, we had all this talk of reading, getting Vedic knowledge through devotees, through advanced devotees. And one question is, what is the context? We are doing Bhakti Shastri here. Exactly, the context is when we are reading Srila Prabhupada's books, we are getting this knowledge in parampara perfectly preserved in that particular mood of the acharyas. So when we are reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that's what exactly we are getting. Authentic Vedic knowledge which will help us realize our God. So you are right on both accounts, that if we are reading Prabhupada's books, we are associating with the pure devotee, we are getting knowledge from a pure devotee, and if we follow the instructions, it will lead us to our realization, which is ultimately loving service to Krishna, prema, Krishna prema. That's why we are here spending so much of our valuable time here trying to read Prabhupada's books in a collective way so that we can discuss and we can get more and more points out of it. Yes, Krunath Prabhu.
I'd just like to make the one point that if we do get the association of Prabhupada studying his books and following his instructions, part of those instructions is that we should also learn to socialize with devotees. I mean, part of nectar of instruction is we have to do the loving exchanges and we have to learn to take shelter of advanced devotees where we find them and learn to, and learn to live with devotees and relate to devotees in that right way. There's one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada says, anyone who thinks he can make advancement in Krishna consciousness outside of the association of devotees is an illusion, or something like that. So that, yes, by reading Prabhupada's books, we're directly in getting association of a pure devotee, and if we follow his instructions, that's more important even than associating directly with his form and serving his physical, presence. But then part of that instruction is that we should then, you know, follow all of his instructions, including getting initiated. And
true.
You know, just like he established in ISKCON, you have to be twice initiated to touch the deities, to cook for the deities, and so forth like that. So some people say, well, I can just study the books, and that's just as good. But right. If you study the books, you should be willing to follow all of the
true.
Instructions.
Yeah. True. Thank you, Prabhupada. Nice point. So we are... Thank you. So let's get back to this Upanishad. We'll just cover off the five verses which you are supposed to read for this Upanishad. So the Upanishad is, it doesn't talk about Rasa Shastra. It doesn't talk about Krishna's flute. It doesn't talk about Krishna's gopi friends in Vrindavan. It talks mainly about the Lord in a mood of awe and reverence, and more of those who don't follow what happens to them, and those who follow, how should they follow? These are the things, these are the themes of Upanishads. And they are very good to present in our preaching tool. If somebody asks about, you know, anything about Vedas, anything about, you know, equality of the world, anything about global warming, anything about anything, you can just put in the verse of each Upanishad and then you can start the conversation saying, which is, the first invocation is, of course, it says that whatever comes out of the Supreme Lord is completely perfect. Spiritual mathematics, you know, take complete whole out of complete, subtract complete whole out of complete, you'll still get complete whole. And out of that complete whole, you subtract again something, you'll get complete whole. Mind-boggling. Mathematical formulas can't capture this. And you'll go crazy, but you can never reach the end of it. So that is spiritual mathematics. This is what the Upanishad says. Perfect. Whatever comes out of the Lord. And both, the thing is, it refers to both. The Lord has different creations, both material and spiritual. Whatever spiritual incarnations, Krishna is multifarious and millions of incarnations. All of them are perfect, and the material world is also perfect. Srila Prabhupada says in the lecture to this verse, if somebody says why God is doing like this, then he doesn't understand. Because if something is happening, it's happening by the will of God and it's perfect. To our apparent eyes, it may seem to be horrible, it may seem to be unjust, it may seem to be vicious, but from the eyes of God, it's perfect. That's what Prabhupada says. And if you take that attitude, there are, of course, it doesn't mean that you just become very callous, but one should know the truth behind it and try to act accordingly. One doesn't become very callous to the sufferings of the world. At the same time, one like gets too emotional that he blames God for all the ills that are plaguing this world. So that's the first words of Upanishad, Om Purnamada Purnamidam. And then that's the invocation. The first verse is, that clearly says that Isha Vashyam Idam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Taktvena Vanjita Magrida Kasya Svidhanam. So those who are God conscious, are faithful to the scriptures, how should they live? That they have certain quota allotted. Each person has some quota allotted in this world, which is ordained by God. And one who takes up this particular quota and is satisfied, that's the way to live. Which is the second verse, which says that this is the way to live, that if you take up whatever is the quota allotted to you, and then you won't be bound up by reactions of work. So in the first text, you get the concept of controller, you get the concept of a jiva, and what is allotment to a jiva. One question people will ask is, well, how do I know what is mine? Everything is happening, and I see that people are just making plans, going after, getting money, and they have made it big. How do I know that it's not mine? I mean, I can keep trying and I can get there. But you say that, you know, God has allotted me. How? So the way is that there are two ways. One thing is, if one is purely on the path of karma, then whatever is the destiny stored for him, one will get it. So through karma, one gets what is due allotted, both pleasures and pains. So it said in Bhagavatam, and Prahlad Maharaj also repeated, Sukham Aidrityam Daitya. So it's two places it is mentioned that those who are on the path of karma, whatever is allotted to you, you will get it. Even if you try a little, you still get it. Even if it is not allotted to you, you can try for eternity, for one day of Brahma, you still won't get it. So through karma allotment, yes, Mataji. I'll give me like 3 minutes, just hold that thought, and then we'll come back. Because I don't want to overrun Vaishish Prabhu's time here. Actually, I'm just like, people are there to listen to him. I'm just a sideshow act here. But so through karma, one gets one allotment. And if one has given up karma, then Krishna says, Brahma Samhita, it says, karmani nirdhati kintu cha bhakti vajam. That Krishna burns the karma, but he allows to whatever is needed for his devotee to maintain his spiritual life. And it may depend on the Lord. He may either allot you a lot, he may give you nothing. But in any case, he will make sure that your loving service to him will be retained. That is Krishna's top priority. So either ways, one knows what is one getting allotted. And one can be satisfied. One should make plans, of course. To for example, that doesn't mean I'm going to be 70 or 80 and I don't care. I didn't make a plan to kind of, you know, save and make sure my... That's not even what I mean by it. But one shouldn't excessively try. Again, it comes back to the prayasa, atyahara and prayasa category. One should know what one needs and what's one's destiny allotted and use our intelligence provided by Krishna to pursue our spiritual life. So those are the two verses. First two verses cover that. Allotment of the jiva soul, Lord is the creator. And the second verse says, those who live in that spirit of being subservient to the Lord, they are not bound up by work. Otherwise, again, it comes to the concept of soul, how one's soul gets bound up, what's the reactions, and so many other things come up in the second verse. So Prabhupada clearly explains that in the purport. The third verse is exactly opposite. What happens if the person or a jiva doesn't follow the first two verses? Who doesn't really believe in the authority of God and who really like goes on, you know, this is mine, Ishwara Oham Aham Bhogi. And again, the 16th verse, 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita comes into play where he says, you know, demons, they just say, this is mine, I'm going to kill that guy, I'm going to make my stamp and this is my empire, I'm going to enjoy, I'm perfect. So what happens to those kind of people? And especially the verse is Atmaha, is the key verse in the second text, where the killers of the soul. This human body is so valuable, so rare, so perfect an opportunity to actually make a permanent solution to all these problems. And if one forgets that and just like neglects it and just goes on in his whimsical way, what happens? That is the third verse. The fourth verse, the first two verses give the God, a little bit of indication of God. The third verse gives the destination. Again, if you see the theme, the controller still remains. In the first verse, God is directly Isha. The word Upanishad, Isha Upanishad, came from the first word Isha. That's what it said, that Isha Upanishad, this becomes Isha Upanishad. So there's a concept of controller pervading throughout. The first text has directly the relation to the controller. The second verse says that if you follow the controller or if you want to follow God, what happens? In the third verse, again, it's the same thing, the destination. The fourth verse is, Isha Upanishad goes in a different way. It doesn't, again, as I said, doesn't talk about Krishna's flute, Krishna's peacock feather, who is the absolute truth. He says, the fourth verse says how God cannot be known, not how God can be known. You can't know him by mind. The demigods can't know him. There are so many things which your mind can't approach. There are so many things which you cannot do or God cannot be known by. So it's an indirect way of knowing about God. That's the fourth verse. And the most important point in the fourth verse, I humbly request to you, is Srila Prabhupada makes this comment in the fourth paragraph that absolute truth is a person. Our whole Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is that is the premise. How absolute truth is a person. It seems a little straightforward and easy, but there's a lot of realization that needs to go into understanding that. And Srila Prabhupada says that if you just know this truth that Krishna is a person, then if you are convinced of that truth that Krishna is a person, then you are perfect in Krishna consciousness. So this is a very important point on the fourth mantra, saying how and in the fifth, there's one beautiful thing also. Because all this talk of God being the controller and I being pretty helpless, okay, I don't want to take initiative. God will do. If God inspires, I'll go to temple. If God inspires, I'll chant Hare Krishna. If God doesn't inspire, that's okay. What can I do? If God inspires, I'll drink and fall on the street. That's God's will. But Prabhupada says clearly that because God has initiative and we are part and parcels of God, we also have initiative in a minute fraction. And if we can utilize that initiative to serve God, then that's the right utilization of the initiative. So it's very clear. The purpose is like, you know, there's no scope for misunderstanding, or Srila Prabhupada's perfect purpose. In fact, I was reading a letter in 76. Srila Prabhupada said to his GBC men that, please relieve me of this management responsibilities. You have been in the society long enough. You know how to deal. Please go and deal with these management issues, so that I can just go, I can translate more and more scriptures. And he said, it's not easy to translate. I have to soberly think of every single word I have to write when I translate. And when I have too many management issues on my to focus on, then I can't do the translation properly. The point I'm trying to make is that Prabhupada's purports are perfect. And what we are doing here is that we are just facilitating to getting that in-depth view into Srila Prabhupada's transcendental mind when he wrote these books. And we are here together trying to do that. So that's mantra 4. And mantra 5. Well, mantra 5 also is a continuation of the same things of the controller. See, they give a little bit of clues here and there, you know, little puzzles. God walks, God doesn't walk. God is very far, God is near. Yeah, that's God. So, and Prabhupada says in his purports about how what seems illogical and what seems absurd when applied to God is perfect, because it's inconceivable. He can be at the same time. He can have all the contradictions in him perfectly balanced, and that's God. And so this gives, again, Isopanishad is like clues to absolute truth, Krishna. And we are getting there. Veda is to sarve rahame vedyo. Through gradual study of Vedas, then one actually, if one is fortunate enough, then one comes to know that, okay, oh, this Lord who is there with Radharani, he is absolute truth. And there is no truth superior to him. That is the whole purpose. So Isopanishad gives that clue. Slowly it introduces that. And if you want to like talk to completely new people, or you are preaching on book distribution to absolutely new people, you can take this book. Hey, do you know God walks and he doesn't walk? He has legs, but he has no legs. Huh? Read this book. So in Mantra 5, there is one thing Prabhupada mentions and which needs a little bit of talking. He says God is saguna and nirguna. Again, in the contradictions. God is near, God is far. God is saguna, God is nirguna. Huh? Because saguna means with qualities, and nirguna means without qualities. So God is with qualities and he is without qualities. Prabhupada says that when Krishna comes to this material world, he is not forced by the laws of material nature, as people think, that when God comes, he becomes one of us. And no, he says, Prabhupada says, Krishna always keeps that supreme control, or he is the supreme personality of God under all circumstances. Therefore, he is nirguna. But then he has all the transcendental qualities. So please read that Saguna and Nirguna, and I'm sure there will be a lot of questions on that. And and there is a question on that also I asked, just to make that point. We are very clear on that. So, yes, Sukeshwari Mati.
Prabhuji, you're telling about, like, when somebody is a devotee of the Lord, the karmas, you know, you're comparing about people who are not devotees and devotees. So does it mean that when people surrender, their Bharabdha karma is totally erased by Krishna?
It's there in Shloka book, Maharshi. If we take the Shloka book, this is in Padma Puran, we can do that real quick. Page 369, the first verse.
Aprarabdha palang papang kutang bijang palon mukham kramenaiva pradiyeta Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. There are different stages of dormant reactions to sinful activities to be observed in a sinful life. Sinful reactions may be just waiting to take effect, palon mukha. Reactions may be still further dormant, kuta, or the reactions may be in a seed-like state, bija. In any case, all types of sinful reactions are vanquished one after another if a person engages in the devotional service of Lord Vishnu.
So, Mataji, does that answer your question? Okay. So, in the process of devotional service, one might ask that if all my sins are destroyed when I'm doing service to Krishna, then how come I'm still suffering, or why there are still apparent problems, troubles, diseases, reversals, losses, job losses, these losses, that losses, and pains, this pains, that stress. So, Krishna still gives the amount of distress needed just to purify the sinful activities, or just to purify the conditioned soul. Not of the sinful activities, they are destroyed by Krishna. But he, when the soul surrenders on to him, it is his, completely his prerogative on what sort of treatment he will mete out to his devotees, just with a view of purifying him, nothing else. And Krishna can give the perfect happiness, or he can give perfect distress. Again, as Akrunath Prabhu says, the attitude of devotee comes into play. And tateno kampam susumikshamano bhunjana evatma kritam vapaham ridvag vapurpir vidadam namaste jivetayo mukti padesa dayabhak. So if one still keeps one face towards Krishna, even when is suffering, telling that, you know, this is just the token of sin, token of purification you are giving me, and if I just somehow or other stay in that path, then guaranteed is liberation. Krishna will never ever... Prabhupada makes a very beautiful statement. Krishna always reciprocates to this service and to his devotee, but not always in the way the devotee wants. So, but any case, in the association of devotees, one's enthusiasm doesn't dampen too much. Even if there are problems, because of that association, loving association, it's just a matter of time because those problems become irrelevant, and one is again like enthusiastically serving Krishna. The association, again, it matters a lot. Without association, it's hard. It's impossible. So, well, any questions on Isopanishad? Before it's about 10 minutes over time, but I beg to be excused by Vaishishika Prabhu. Before we wind up, there is one very important topic which I wanted Vaishishika Prabhu to address also, and get his clarification before we, and also Akrunath Prabhu, before we actually go on to the next phase. I feel it's important for the Bhakti Shastri students. Whenever Vaishishika Prabhu is ready. Ready? Okay. One of the, previously when Prabhupada started ISKCON, there were few sets of literature, and devotees would just read those. That was to the extent of that. And we would just, they would read Prabhupada's books, and that was it. But now, with this generation, there are so many books coming out. There are so many translations. There are so many different authors within ISKCON itself, giving the translations of different acharyas. For example, Isopanishad. You know, we have Prabhupada's book, and then we have this another Isopanishad, where Banu Maharaj has given the commentaries from Madhvacharya, Vedanta Desika, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Baladeva Vidyabhushan. So, this is just a case to. So, Prabhuji, what would be our way to go? You know, with so many deluge of books, how should we do? What should we do about it?
Well, there's a morning walk where some of the devotees are having an argument. Even in the old days when devotees first went to India, some of the devotees, even when we didn't have temples in India, went to India because they were draft dodgers. And they had to get out of America, either go to Canada or India. So some of them went there and stayed in the Gaudiya Mutts, because Prabhupada had godbrothers there, and he placed them there under their keeping for some time. And then other books started coming into ISKCON, even in the early days when we only had a few books, not lots of books, and there were controversies about reading other books and such things that coming from previous acharyas, and so some devotees had understood that Prabhupada said, you know, you shouldn't read these other books from previous acharyas, and there was a stricture that somebody made that. You know, you'll be kicked out of the temple if you're seen reading these books. You know, something extreme. Anyway, then on this one morning walk, they're having a conversation with Prabhupada, and the two sides, they're bringing these things up. And they say, but Prabhupada, you said that, you know, we can't read the books of the previous acharyas. And he said, I said that? No, I said you should read the books of the previous acharyas. But he made the point that you should first digest what you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, moving on to all kinds of things before you've understood Bhagavad Gita or taken in a practical application in your life. Who's doing karma yoga nicely? Who's actually studied Bhagavad Gita carefully? It's very rare, even in ISKCON. Not that many people make a study of Bhagavad Gita and get distracted to so many other things. But everything's there. It's the source of everything. So Prabhupada's point was we should become well-founded in the books that he's given us. And also, it is a cause of fall down. This is a kind of atyahara that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions, which is to read too many books. There's an exact verse like that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says one should not become a bookworm. Also, it's an offense to study different parts of various shastras in order to bring opposing opinions. Mm. There's a way in which you can, you know, become expert at nitpicking because you know all the opposites. But Tarko Pratishtanat, understanding the absolute truth doesn't come through being a tarki. It means don't be a tarki. Don't just bring up opposing arguments. It's for the sake of understanding and clearly knowing. So we should digest the main books that Prabhupada has, as you're very kindly teaching us to do through the Bhakti Shastri process, and then move on accordingly. And there are lots of good references that we can use when we digest what we have now and we want to explore further. Then we can reference those things. Nothing wrong in that.
Thank you. Thank you. And just to add one final point is that Srila Prabhupada, when he gave the purports, it was for this day and age. There's no harm in reading, for example, there's no harm in reading Madhvacharya's purport. But honestly, one would be completely misled because Madhvacharya wrote his commentary and he addressed a group which is completely different than what it is today. And then it was, Srila Prabhupada's purports are very relevant, are very useful and very direct to us. So if we, as Prabhuji said, if we are like completely fixed, then we can, sure. Yeah. The reason I brought up this is because there are so many publications that are coming out and then, you know, we should have our own. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for coming. Please forgive me for any offenses.